Heartless, and it's time for It's All About Food. And you know what? I just realized that this week is my fourth anniversary here at Progressive Radio Network hosting this show, It's All About Food. I wanted to talk about that for just a minute. I am so grateful for having this opportunity, grateful to the Progressive Radio Network, the whole crew in the studio, and to Gary Knoll. I have learned so much from doing this show, and I've heard from so many of you and what you've gotten out of it, and I can't say thank you enough. I can't believe 4 years has gone by. 4 years. And now what we're doing is this transcription project where we're transcribing all of these shows. So many people that I've spoken with, experts in the food movement, now we're getting their information down, documenting it, and making it easier for you to access this information. 4 years. Can you believe it? Now, one thing I want to remind you, those who are new to this show or those who have been listening for 4 years, why I do it. Now, obviously, I promote a vegan diet, a plant-based diet, and my primary reason all this time has been the animals. I became vegetarian when I was very young, and I don't believe in killing animals. It's that simple. But during this journey, I've learned so much, and it's just a wonderful bonus to know that plant foods are healthy. And eating plant foods instead of animal foods is great for the environment. So it's a win-win-win. And I love talking about food, healthy, delicious food. And it's just been a great time for me. Now, one of the things that I do on this show is I talk to all kinds of people about food. Certainly, I love to give an opportunity to people that are vegan and promoting the vegan message in any way that they can through cookbooks or information about food and nutrition, doctors, nutritionists. I also like to talk to people who aren't vegan, because there's a lot of people out there who are not eating vegan, but they have a lot of good information about food, and I think it's important to talk about, like, food policy, for example. That affects all of us, no matter what we choose to eat. And then there are people that are promoting different diets that I don't agree with, but I think there's something that they're talking about that's of value, and we talk about those things. And we all learn something in the end. The bottom line is, one thing is for certain, nothing. And although I believe very strongly in the diet that I eat, there's a lot of information out there. It's confusing, and we are all not going to come to the same decision. But I like to offer my opinion, common sense, and I love to hear from you and what you have to say. So that's it, my fourth anniversary here on It's All About Food. Now let's get to the first guest. We've had her on the show before. Jill Eckert is a nutrition program manager at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM. We love PCRM, a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting preventative medicine, especially better nutrition and higher standards in research. Welcome back to It's All About Food, Jill.
Great to be back.
Hey, now, I spoke to you earlier today, and I told you that I wanted you to tell us all kinds of horrible things about the food that we're serving in schools, especially processed meats.
Yes, and I am
meats.
Ready.
Okay.
You know, unfortunately, it's not good news.
It's not good news.
You know, what we're seeing is just really scary. And what I really want to zero in today with your listeners is processed meat and the risks with processed meat and what we're seeing in schools.
Now, I remember maybe 10, 20 years ago, we started talking about nitrates and things that were in processed meats, and it got some attention, and then somehow people forgot about it.
Yeah, I think people have forgotten, but the science is really coming in more and more. Every week we're seeing really a consensus that processed meat is got a stronger link than ever to colorectal cancer. We saw a really great study come out just 2 weeks ago linking processed meat to premature death. We're also seeing a link to diabetes.
Where did that most recent study come from?
That came from the EPIC trial, and that's short for the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer and Nutrition. Mm. It's a ginormous study of 440,000 men and women.
Were they surprised with that result? Were they expecting that result?
Well, it supports the findings that we had seen prior, but it really just helps with, you know, having all this additional evidence.
Right.
And what it said is that eating red meat and processed meat increased the risk of dying by 14% and 44%, 14 for men, 44% for women. You know, it's supporting what has come out in the past from Harvard that is linking red and processed meat to premature death. So we've got bad news, but we have good things that we can do about it.
Let's not get to the good news yet.
Yeah.
You said 14% for men and 44% for women. Both of those numbers are big. But why the difference between men and women? That's like men are supposed to eat processed meats, or they can get away with it a little more. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's unclear. But it is an exceptional study, you know, with almost 13 years of follow-up.
Have there been any critics of this study since it came out? There are always naysayers that say, oh, yeah, they should have done this or they should have done that.
Sure. I mean, I'm sure there are, but this study is a really, really well-known study, and it's very, very large. And the fact that it's actually supporting what we've seen coming out before is really good. So it's nothing, it's not new news, but it really helps us to continue to try and get this message out to the public in a stronger way.
Right. Now, what other studies have there been that you're familiar with that have pointed out this obvious information to me?
Yeah, the Harvard School of Public Health found that a daily serving of processed meat increases the risk of premature death by 20%.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. And basically what we're talking about is one hot dog.
All right, one hot dog a day.
A serving. Yeah, you know, basically like a 50-gram serving.
Yeah, let's talk about what are processed meats.
Good question. So processed meat, deli meats, pepperoni, hot dogs, chicken dogs, you know, any kind of dog usually is a processed meat. Bacon, sausage, turkey ham. Usually when people think of something with turkey in it, they think it's healthier.
Right.
But these are really processed meats, like the turkey ham. Turkey is another category in itself. But, yeah, sausage, bacon, pepperoni.
Bacon.
Deli meat.
There's a big trend now where people are getting back to bacon and really going crazy over it. That's a processed meat?
Yeah, and that's people are really putting themselves at risk. You know, as I mentioned, just one serving, you know, is putting your, you know, increasing your risk by 20%. That's just one hot dog.
Right.
But yeah, people are going crazy for bacon. It's the opposite direction that we want to go in.
Yeah. Well, and it's also not very nice for the animals. Which
that's
is where I'm
truth.
Coming from, and people just don't want to connect those dots. So we, you know, as I mentioned at the opening of the show, my motivation all along has been about animals and the cruelty that happens to animals and the factory farming and the horrible treatment. And I know that that's where PCRM got started too. But we have to prove in so many other ways reasons for people not to eat animals, and health is such an important one.
Absolutely. And in terms of school lunch, you know, we know how important meals are to students in terms of them thriving in their classes. And there's a lot of good research that says how important breakfast is. And breakfast is one of those meals that we zeroed in in our research with schools and just found tons of sausage, tons of bacon, tons of turkey ham on the menus across the country. And we even saw, you know, the cities and states with the highest amounts of colorectal cancer linking up with the schools that were serving the most processed meat.
Right, like in Mississippi.
It's very scary.
Yeah. And why do they do that? Why are they serving these foods at breakfast?
Yeah, you know, what
Who tells them to do that? They have nutritionists that are somehow involved in these programs, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I do think that you know, one of our goals is to really increase education around this issue. So I think that people really don't know, and even healthcare professionals are lacking in the knowledge around this. So we really want to make a huge campaign around just educating people about the risks of processed meat. So number one, maybe some people don't know. Two, I think that, you know, people are really, you know, mirroring fast food in school lunch. And that's what we're seeing for breakfast, what we're seeing for lunch. I've probably talked about this the last time we talked with, we were talking about snacks for kids. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of fast food style foods on breakfast menus and lunch menus as well.
Now, fast food, how much of the fast foods are processed meats?
Oh, you see it in every menu. You see bacon all over the place, and breakfast. You're seeing sausage on every menu. So it's there. And hot dogs at this, you know, all over the place. When you go to a ball game, people have hot dogs.
So we have the evidence now that these foods are bad. What's in them that's bad? I don't believe in eating any meat, but why are they worse than meat that isn't considered processed meat?
You know, there isn't really a consensus on what exactly it is. And that could be part of what's so challenging about getting this message out to school food professionals as well as healthcare professionals. There's still some information that we don't know. You know, is it the nitrates? There really is... you know, we need more information there. But we do know is that these, you know, studies are coming out with this critical information. So I think we just really don't know exactly what it is in the processed meat that's doing that, that is putting at such a risk for colorectal cancer. So we have more to learn on that.
Numbers are bigger than the risks if you're just eating a steak. And that's not good either, but the processed meat definitely rings the bell in terms of great risk.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the other issues with processed meat, you know, above and beyond, you know, the link with colorectal cancer is, you know, they're loaded with cholesterol and saturated fat. So there's sort of this other picture of these processed meats, which make them make a really good case to pull them out of school lunch.
Okay, now part of the problem is the government and what the government subsidizes and recommends and supports. So where is the government on processed meats?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, they need as much education as anybody else. I think maybe that a lot of groups are aware of these links and are seeming to wait for even more evidence. But, you know, the evidence is already in. We know that, you know, just one hot dog, you know, increases your risk so much. So we think that's enough to take take action. But perhaps some of these other agencies need a little bit more convincing. So we're working on some dialogues with these agencies as well that can make change. But I do think that it is not required for schools to serve processed meat. So a campaign to the schools to be the leader and remove processed meat from their school lunches is something that, you know, any school can do.
Okay, so let's say a parent is listening and they want to do something to get the processed meats out of their child's school lunch program. What can they do?
I'd recommend having a discussion with their food service professional, the director of food and nutrition, and make a request that they, either begin slowly or remove altogether the processed meat from their menu.
Yeah,
and
because
it does
take a parent or someone close to the individual schools to make things happen.
I think parents have a great perspective. They can, you know, request a meeting with the principal or the food service director. They can get a group of concerned parents together. They can go to the PTA and talk about it. The wellness committee is a great place to bring conversations up just like this.
And does PCRM have helpful materials that people can bring to their school?
We do. We do. We have a lot of material on our website, pcrm.org. And we also have a special website for school lunch issues, and it's healthyschoollunches.org.
Healthyschoollunches.org.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what about vegetarian analogs to these processed meats, like veggie deli slices and vegan hot dogs? What do you think of those?
Yeah, I mean, those things are acceptable. They may not be especially affordable for schools. Mm. So our focus for this campaign with processed meat and school lunch is really to have the schools remove them. While these meat analogs, certainly they don't have any risk to colorectal cancer, mm-hmm. Or premature death, they may not be necessarily affordable for schools, but I think they're certainly worth looking into, and I have seen some of them on the menus in schools for lunch or breakfast, and it's a great alternative.
Well, I think it's a great alternative for people that are thinking about eliminating meat from their diet and mm-hmm. as a transition food. I think we both know that it's not the healthiest food on the planet because it's loaded with sodium, but it's probably a better choice than the actual meat products.
Absolutely. And just take stadiums, for instance, baseball stadiums all across the country, if they were to pull the hot dogs out, mm-hmm. which is in the best interest of public health, mm-hmm. then subbing in the veggie dogs
would be so beautiful.
Would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Other healthful options.
Most people wouldn't know. Most people wouldn't even know. You give them a bun and sauerkraut and mustard, they wouldn't even know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So what are you telling the schools to substitute? What foods can they use that kids will eat?
Well, some schools are really, have good menus, but they're still serving processed meat. So what we're asking is just pull the processed meat off. If they need to substitute other things, there are tons of healthy options. But really our campaign is about getting this risk off the menu, pulling these off. And they have tons of other options. If we're talking about breakfast, we're seeing sausage, egg, and cheese biscuits. We're seeing, for lunch, we're seeing hot dogs. We really are seeing hot dogs on school lunch menus mm-hmm. and pepperoni pizza after pepperoni mm-hmm. pizza. So there's a lot of other healthful options that don't include processed meat.
Well, one of the things is that schools serve foods that they think the kids will want to eat. And there's a whole discussion here. Is that really what kids want to eat? Would they eat more healthful options? Is it partially the parents that are involved who bring their kids up eating the wrong foods? And the kids need education, too. So how is PCRM communicating to the kids about not wanting to eat processed meat? Is there anything for the children for their education?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it's very important to talk to kids about this risk, and the way that we're doing it is mostly through educating adults and having them try and take the action in their households or take action by talking to schools, and we have rolled out this campaign to remove processed meat from school lunch. So we're trying to hit the school food service professionals and educate them as well, because it's very important that the food service professionals have the education, because they do influence the kids' choices in the lunch lines for sure.
Okay, so have you personally worked with any school services? And I'm just wondering what their response has been to the suggestion of removing processed meats.
Yeah, so our campaign to get schools to remove processed meat is fairly new, but in my work with schools, many of them are very interested in trying to reduce meat in general. There are some challenges to that, and some of it is, they think that maybe the kids won't eat the foods, but there are lots of ways to work with schools to make these healthy changes, and we have had some really good success in some of our pilot programs, aside from this campaign, from this Process Meat campaign, but we're really just at the beginning, which is, okay. is very exciting.
Okay.
So we're going to be making a request to schools across the country to remove processed meat from their menu, and while at the same time working on a policy level to try and change the national school lunch program so that they don't allow it to be served.
Right. Yeah, I always see it as a three-pronged problem, this whole food thing. One is the individual, and that includes the person who's eating, or if it's a child, their parents and their family and all the people around them. And then the other prong is the government and the food policies that make it either affordable or not affordable, or provide information so people know what the right foods are. And I don't think the government's doing a very good job at that. And then there's marketing and media and all that information about that brainwash us literally about what we should be eating. And we need to attack all three of those in order to make change.
Absolutely. It's very important to be working on all levels, and we're excited to be doing that.
Okay. Jill, thank you. I'm so glad you're doing this work with Processed Meats. I'm certainly going to do my best to stay away from them. Oh, I already am. And I love all the work that PCRM is doing, PCRM.org. Any last tidbits before we go?
Yeah, absolutely. We also have the site, healthyschoollunches.org, and we appreciate anybody coming to the site and helping us spread the word.
Okay, thank you so much for joining me, Jill. All the
best
to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Wow. Stay away from hot dogs. You know that already, though, don't you? I don't eat very many processed vegetarian meats either, although when I was transitioning a long time ago, they did come in handy, and they still do come in handy for some people. And, you know, once a year, maybe July 4th or something, I actually may indulge in a vegan hot dog and try and feel American in some bizarre way. I wanted to tell you some more things that I'm involved with. Okay, this is really super exciting. I can't wait to tell you. So last week I mentioned some of the places I'm going to be speaking. And I'm going to be in California in mid-April till the end of April. I'll be speaking at Berkeley Vegan Earth Day on April 20th. But the real exciting thing is we've started a new project. It's called The Swingin' Gourmets, and it's a vegan musical. It's a vegan cabaret act. We are going to be premiering in Los Gatos, California on Earth Day, which is my birthday. We're going to be having a big birthday party and a musical show with a vegan message. It's going to be fun, funny. And if you're in the neighborhood, I really would love you to be there. So you can find out more about it by going to responsibleeatingandliving.com, or we have a bright, shiny new website, swingingourmets.com. I'll spell that. SWINGOURMETS.com. There's one G in the middle. SwinginGourmets.com. And if you want the Swingin' Gourmets to come to you, you can send me a message at info@realmeals.org, because we will be touring. We will be going to South Florida in May, bringing it home in New York sometime late summer or fall, and honing the show and bringing it all around. I think this message is so important, and there are so many different ways to communicate eating plant-based foods, and we need to get it from all angles, and entertainment is a very important part. And I'm a believer in theater and how people can learn from watching a performance piece. Somehow, that's a way into connecting the dots for people, in addition to reading books and listening to radio shows and a whole host of things. I think this is also an important piece, so I'm really excited about that, and I hope to see you somewhere along the tour, swingingourmets.com. And then I've talked about this once before, and I have to bring it up because it's just crazy. But walking up Broadway here in Manhattan on the way to the studio, very often there are people out soliciting one thing or another. Very often there are people who want you to sign a petition for one thing or another. There could be Greenpeace or there could be other organizations. Some of them are very worthwhile and they've got great missions. But what I always want to bring people to what I believe in. And when people come up to me to sign a petition or ask me something, the first thing I ask them is, are you vegan? And I let them realize that what they're talking about is so connected with food and factory farming. Our environment is being devastated primarily because of all of the animals we're growing on this planet to feed people. And if we stopped or at least reduced it, we would have dramatic positive effects on the environment. And when people stop me to talk about the environment, one group or another, that's the first thing I ask. And the expression, the response I usually get back is, well, no, maybe I should be, or no, it's kind of vague. And then I proselytize right back to them my message. Today, a woman came up to me who had some biblical message. She had some pamphlets talking about the Bible. And my first question back to her was, are you a vegan? She didn't know what vegan was. I asked her if she was a vegetarian. And my question to people like that who want to promote their religious philosophy, I want to remind them a number of things. In the Ten Commandments, there's that little one, thou shalt not kill. And I always ask, who are we not killing? Is it white men saying, I'm not going to kill other white men? Is it men saying, I'm not going to kill other men, or I'm not going to kill people of my religion? Or does it just mean not kill any living thing? So I like to always throw that out there. And then there's this one thing in the Bible. Now, you have to understand, and I've said this many times, I am not a religious person. I respect people in their philosophies, but I'm not a practicing anything other than a vegan. And there is this one little line in the Bible in Genesis 1:29, and it talks about how all we should be eating is plant foods. I remind people of that because I'm always looking for an angle, one angle or another, to stop this cruelty with animals. And if it's through religion, if it's through entertainment, whatever it is, I'm going to use it. Anyway, why don't we take a break? That sounds good to me. So while we're taking a break, visit swingingourmets.com, responsibleeatingandliving.com, all those great websites, so much to do. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's all about food. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's Karen Hartglass. We are back. It is March 19, 2013, and we're talking about food, my favorite subject. It's all about food. And I am here in the studio with Karen Ranzi. I haven't seen Karen in a long time, but it's good to have her here in the studio. She is an author, lecturer, health coach, raw vegan chef, and speech pathologist. She has authored and published her book, Creating Healthy Children, in 2010. Her fresh plant-based recipe book and a book about healing acne naturally will be available in 2013. There's a whole lot more about Karen, and you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and read it. But right now, we're just going to get down to talking. Welcome to It's All About Food, Karen.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Yeah,
it's exciting
so
to be
fun.
Here.
Now, I met you maybe 8 or 9 years ago when I was going through my raw food journey. I was all raw for about 2 years.
Right.
But I'm not anymore.
Mm-hmm. We met at a raw food, well, vegan cafe that had half the menu raw.
Which one was that?
Caravan of Dreams.
Oh, right. Yeah. Caravan of Dreams has a wonderful, wonderful menu of raw food and vegan food.
I think it's the best way to go about it because it really gives people a choice. Everything's vegan. And that way people who want to follow through with raw foods, there's plenty of raw vegan and there's
It's still one of my favorite restaurants in Manhattan. And it's interesting because it's been around since the 90s, I think. And There have been so many other restaurants that have either come and gone or come and stayed that are vegan. And it still has, I think, my favorite menu.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a great menu there.
They have, I wasn't even thinking about talking about this, and now I'm really hungry. But they have wonderful salads on their menu.
They have so many choices. It's fantastic. It's really a vegan paradise.
Vegan paradise, yep.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I used to go there a lot in my raw days.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you're on an all-raw diet?
I'm on an all-raw diet.
And how long have you been doing that?
19 years.
19 years? Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
But it started with my son. I made a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily recommend.
They're not mistakes, Karen. They're learning experiences.
They're learning experiences. Exactly. Yes. At the beginning, though, what really was a very powerful and meaningful experience was my son's healing from asthma, chronic ear infections, and multiple food allergies through, we were already vegan, but we were eating a lot of processed food. Pasta and bread was like our main staple. And I was sick a lot. And then when my son was an infant, really young, 5 weeks old, we were at the hospital. And he almost passed away there.
One of the worst places there. You want to be. It's so
exactly.
dangerous in the hospital. It's worse now than it was.
He was only 5 weeks old.
Yeah.
And it was so scary. And for the next 3 years of his life, he had wheezing all day long. Mm. And it got much worse at night. I would sometimes sleep with him on top of me. I was so fearful. And we were running to doctors. He had chronic ear infections. He was in pain all the time. And he was allergic to almost everything.
Wow.
Pollens and foods and animal hair. And having this child out in the world was really difficult. And we tried everything. We tried allopathic medicine. We tried alternative kinds of therapies that had validity in and of themselves, but they weren't taking care of the cause of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started, after 3 years, I just hit rock bottom with going to practitioners, and I realized there had to be another way. And that's when I realized that what my own grandmother had done, right in my very own family, really was the spark for me to take off on doing raw foods. Because as a young child, my grandmother had told me all about the benefits of eating very high in raw fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't say the word raw. She said natural. They didn't have that word raw back then. It was just natural, uncooked, getting all the nutrients. And I ignored her. I grew up in the 50s and the 60s. Mm-hmm. And
living through chemistry.
Yeah. My father and my grandmother, they ate fruits and vegetables all day long and big salads and some steamed vegetables. And they didn't go to medical doctors, and they were always healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And my family, my other extended family ate differently. My friends ate differently, and I ignored that. But my grandmother had asthma and emphysema in the early 1920s.
Wow. Did she smoke?
She did not smoke.
Wow.
No. And they gave her some rounds of penicillin at the hospital, and that didn't do anything. Just made her much worse. And then they gave her only several months to live.
Mm-hmm.
And
been there.
So you can relate to my story.
Right.
So my grandmother was a single mom. My father was only 4 years old. And, you know, for most people, like as Margaret Mead says, it's easier to change your religion than to change your diet. And that's why I also think it's hard. You know, a lot of people want to go vegan and then they try and they bounce back and forth. My grandmother was more determined because of her situation. And so she turned to a friend who had healed. And she got some information about a book that had just come out at that time by a German professor named Arnold Ehret, Ehret. And the book was called The Mucusless Diet Healing System.
Yes, I have it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So she had somebody bring her that book when she was in the hospital.
Wow.
And she read it, and she said, I have nothing to lose. She became a vegetarian overnight. Then she moved to vegan. And then she moved to a diet that was very high in fresh plant foods. So she still had some steamed vegetables, maybe some vegetable soup or something like that. But she had most of her food was raw fruits and vegetables, some nuts and seeds. And she healed in under a year.
Wow.
So when my child was sick later on, after trying everything else I could, I eventually came back to that.
And it worked.
And it worked.
Wow.
So we did green juices and green smoothies and smoothies and fruit and
vegetables.
You were
really ahead of your time. Now people are talking more about green juicing and green smoothies. It's becoming trendy.
Right. Yeah, we did it back then when nobody was, I mean, a few people, but not much out there. And there weren't really, you know, there certainly were not any support groups or festivals or expos for families. There was really no support group for my kids. And so I just learned from experience. There was a group in Manhattan that was run by a man named Matthew Grace. And that group brought me into Manhattan on Monday evenings to get together with other raw foodists and hear their success stories and to help to transition. And so I made a lot of mistakes along the way or had some life-changing experiences.
There you go. Uh-huh.
But, you know, eventually I think I found my way. When I work with people, though, I don't really ask them to go to 100% raw. I feel that just adding significant amounts of raw food is extremely beneficial and can certainly create a healthy lifestyle. Sometimes, especially for children, there can be social ramifications of going 100% raw. So I really tell the parents to leave that up to their kids.
I like to say, I said it earlier in the show, one thing is certain. That is nothing.
That's
and
right.
We're learning a lot about nutrition, far more than we've ever known. And unfortunately, people get educated about nutrition by commercials more often than anything else. And most of our doctors don't know much. We hang on to one word here, or we listen to Dr. Oz or the doctor's shows. And that's not a place to learn about healthy food. Occasionally, they'll have a good program on, but they also bring on information about sensational things that are just nonsense. So it gets confusing.
That's right.
And there are magazines that have articles, and sometimes there's good information, but usually it's kind of mingled with some other stuff that's just nutty. So I like to say one thing is for certain, and that is nothing really is certain, but there are a few things that we know now today, and we know that humans need to live on a primarily plant-based diet. We know this. Now, we don't know if a 100% vegan diet versus a primarily plant-based diet with a little bit of animal food in it is better. We don't have that information in terms of clinical tests. I personally think that eating all plant foods is superior, and it's superior not just for health, but also for other reasons, ethical and environmental.
Oh, right. And we've been, you know, we've seen this in the longest lived cultures.
Right.
The Okinawans, they're known to have about 1%.
Yeah, that's very small amount.
It's so small.
Underlined small. Okay.
And same as the other long lived cultures.
Right.
Like the Costa Ricans who live on Nicoya Peninsula. They are also 1 to 2% animal products.
And then in the last 50 years or more now, we started to get in trouble because technology improved and things became more convenient and things started to get processed. And it's interesting because as we're learning more about diet and nutrition, more than we ever learned before, there's more bad things for us to eat at the same time.
Yes, definitely.
And it's confusing everything.
Yes. And in addition to that, the Meat and the Dairy Council
so strong
have a monopoly over the school system.
Yeah.
So kids are learning in school that they definitely have to have meat and animal products to get enough protein.
Right. They get free material.
They're never taught about all the protein that you can get from eating plant foods. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of protein in the plant world.
And you say elephants and gorillas, and
that's
where do
right.
they get their protein from?
Exactly. And that was one of the things that I, you know, really direct people to do is look at the animals out there. The biggest animals, big, beautiful, muscular animals are plant eaters. You know, the horse, the cow, the bison, the rhino, the elephant. They're all plant eaters.
Well, they should be plant eaters. I mean, unfortunately, the ones we raise for food, we feed them all kinds of things that they shouldn't be eating.
And the domestic animals get the same diseases as the humans get because of that. And,
Excuse me. Okay. Now, I come from a scientific background, and when I read information, I like to see the science. It makes me feel better. I like to see clinical studies. I don't believe in all the clinical studies I see either, because very often when I get and I read the original report, I see flaws in the study, that they didn't compare the right things in order to come to the conclusions that they did. But I still like to see studies. But that being said, there's plenty that we don't know. So people that we both respect, like Dr. Furman, for example, he recommends that we eat at least 50% of our food should be, our calories from food should come from raw plant foods. We know that they're important. We don't know exactly why, and I think that's because the science just isn't there yet. People, and raw foodists get a bad rap a lot of times because they're using terms that are not based in science, and scientists might roll their eyes, you know, when people say this food is alive, or this food has an aura to it or something. That's because we don't have the science yet to measure what's in these foods that we know are so important.
Right. And I think also that some of the talk about enzymes, which I had believed for so many years, is not really accurate.
Right.
What I do know and what I truly do believe is that it makes a tremendous amount of sense that raw plant foods are more nutrient dense, or most of them are more nutrient dense, because when you put fire to something, it's got to take away some of the nutrients. And there have been studies that have shown that for many of the foods that are cooked, that somewhere around 70 to 85% of the nutrients can be void from those foods. And so that, I think, is the thing that really drew me in to really believing that it was going to be better for me.
Well, I was drawn into the raw food concept too in around 2004, and I did it for about 2 years. And I fell out of it for a lot of different reasons, and one is because I got advanced ovarian cancer. My belly started growing, and I was trying all different kinds of things with my diet because I thought I had uterine fibroids, and I didn't realize that it was this giant tumor that got out of control. Well, that's a long story. I've talked about it a bunch of times on this show. But what drew me to the raw food diet was, originally, I thought, I want to eat what humans are meant to eat, and I started thinking this is the most natural thing. I've changed my mind because I realize I was romanticizing a bit about, you know, the whole vision of Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden and all these lovely fruits, luscious fruits and things. And here it is, 2013. Then it was around 2006. I don't live in that world. This world is very different than the world of 1,000 years ago, or whenever. When did fire? When was fire created? I don't know how many millions of years ago.
Oh gosh, I don't know.
And so we live in a very different world today, and I just think we need to be open about all kinds of things. Our food is not as nutrient dense as it was originally because our soils are so poorly cared for, even if it's grown organically. There's a lot of things that are not natural anymore. And that led me to believe that maybe I don't need to be eating entirely raw. I realize that raw foods are really powerful. But sometimes when you cook food, you make other nutrients more absorbable. So there's this whole conversation of what really is best. And we don't really have the answer to that. So we all have to do what's comfortable for us.
Right. We have to do what feels best. For me, I've had just so many powerful examples and so many observations. I work with pregnant women, and I've observed women who have raw pregnancies. And I just interviewed a couple who had their second child. For their first child, she ate much differently. She had more of a conventional diet and She started to become more, by the end of that pregnancy, she was vegan. Mm-hmm. She gradually went towards it. But she was, you know, eating, especially before that pregnancy, she was eating the standard American diet. And her first pregnancy was like a 4-day labor and very difficult childbirth. And she went to she had a totally raw pregnancy for her second child. And she gave birth. She had a very easy birth, and it was just wonderful. She had a home birth, and she's nursing. She's got this beautiful big baby. She's nursing him, and it's only from her milk. She's got a plentiful breast milk supply, whereas with the first child, she had a hard time with breast milk supply, and she and her husband are just really quite sure it was from their total change in diet. They both, her husband lost about 100 pounds, and she also lost weight. They were both extremely overweight. So there's a lot of positive things that, you know, and they chose to go 100%. What I believe is that people can do really well just by increasing the raw plant foods in their diet from where they are. For me, it not only did it make a lot of sense because of the nutrient density, but also because of the water. When we cook our food, we are depleting the water. And so, you know, I don't need to really have studies for that kind of observation. I know that I need to drink a lot more water when I was eating cooked food. As when I went to raw foods, I'm getting really so much of my water from my green juices, my green smoothies, my big salads, my fruit. And I'm getting I feel that I'm getting the protein that I need. And so I think that with raw food, there are some things that we need to be careful of. First of all, there are many people who go totally gourmet.
I was going to bring this up next, some of your learning experiences. You know, there's
yes.
just like any diet, vegetarian, vegan, raw, there are so many different shades, the 50
yes.
shades of
yes.
vegan, the 50 shades of
and
raw.
And I have seen some very haphazard raw food diets, mm-hmm. and mine was that way for the first years.
Mm-hmm.
I did eat a lot of food, raw fruits and vegetables just the way they were, but I also ate a tremendous amount of nuts. Loads of nuts. I could sit there with 2 cups of nuts
yep.
a day, and it didn't do well by me.
Yeah, I
feel
remember
well
going
after
to
a while.
Some of the gourmet raw restaurants and eating and just feeling really heavy afterwards from all the nuts, the oil, and the namashoyu.
Oh, definitely. And these are not health foods.
Mm-hmm.
We need a small amount of nuts and seeds,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
We don't need to have these huge amounts of nuts and seeds. Nuts are acid forming. The only one that's alkaline forming is almonds. And our blood is slightly alkaline. So we need to be eating the foods that are more alkaline forming. And that's why I believe in a diet that's very high in green leafy vegetables. And I didn't do that at the beginning either.
Right.
I ate mostly fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And I still believe that we need to have fruit. I eat fruit.
You know,
but I upped my greens significantly
yeah, greens,
over the years.
Greens. You know how much I talk about greens on this show.
I'm sure you do.
I have
I'm
a food
sure
show called It's All About It's All About Greens
yes.
on my website. The thing about fruit. Now, when I started on an all-raw diet a long time ago, I was eating a lot of fruit. And I think that was part of my problem. Eating a lot of fruit, you can get a lot of sugar. And mm-hmm. sugar, if you're not entirely healthy, can aggravate some problems that you already have. But some of the other scary things about fruit these days, I was talking to Adam Gollner, who wrote a book called The Fruit Hunters, and he was talking about what we do to tropical fruit to bring it to the United States, or fruit in general. And there are so many things. A lot of the tropical fruits actually get a little cooked before they bring
oh,
them
yes.
in.
I know that with the mangoes, that
yeah.
they eat the mangoes.
And,
yeah.
And when I think about all those things, I think, well, maybe I should just wait until I get to Costa Rica and eat the foods that are there.
Right. And just when I was in Costa Rica, the bananas, you know, mm-hmm. bananas ripened. Like
right.
we would take off a whole bunch, but they ripened on the plant. And it was just a whole different experience than the bananas that we eat here. But I still feel that we need not only the vitamins, but we also need the calories. the glucose from the fruit. So I certainly don't believe in giving up fruit. And, you know, some people say that, you know, if they have cancer, that they should give up fruit. I have also observed people heal cancer mm-hmm. with fruit. So mm-hmm.
I was eating only berries during my treatment mm-hmm. period, the not so sweet, high answer cancer fighting property kind
right.
of fruits,
lower glycemic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, in your book, Creating Healthy Children, which came out 2 or 3 years ago, you reference a lot of different people who have a lot of different things to say about a lot of different things.
That's right. And some of them differ greatly.
And a lot of them differ mm-hmm. greatly. I wanted to bring up a few of them. And maybe some of the things that I didn't agree with. Okay, so clearly we agree on the power of raw fruits and vegetables. Everybody's got to be eating them. And greens, kale is king. There's nothing that kale can't do. I can't say that enough.
Right.
But I eat soy foods, and mm-hmm. I think that organic, minimally processed tofu, tempeh, edamame, I think they're good. And they actually have some preventative, protective qualities when it comes to cancer. You mentioned Sally Fallon and the Weston Price people. They do not promote a vegetarian diet.
They don't.
And
the only thing that I agree that they do talk about is the problems with soy.
So my question mm-hmm. to you is, when they're so anti-vegetarian diet, how do you find their information on soy credible? Because I don't.
Right.
But I just wondered.
Right. Well, I do believe because it's not only their information. Mm-hmm. I also quoted Dr. Gabriel Cousins, who has done quite a lot of research on soy, and he is vegan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And raw.
He's raw mm-hmm. and vegan. And I put their information in there because I felt that it was, I felt that from all of the different observations that I've made and people who I've spoken with, that their information on soy was accurate. And I do feel that tofu and soy milk, that those products are highly processed. I feel mm-hmm. that tofu is no better than eating white bread.
Well, it depends on where you get it from. There are some that are better than others.
Maybe if somebody's making it locally and you mm-hmm. know exactly how mm-hmm. they're making it and it's not so processed, but I think that the majority of the tofu out there and the, you know, highly processed soy products.
I tell people there's plenty of plant foods mm-hmm. out there. If you don't want to eat soy foods, that's fine. But
exactly.
I'm very comfortable eating the minimally right. processed tofu, tempeh, edamame, miso.
Mm-hmm. Tempeh is better.
Because it's fermented.
Because it's fermented. Mm-hmm. But I never recommend the tofu and the other more processed foods. They're also highly allergenic. I know a lot of children who have been given soy early on and they become allergic.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very hormonally unbalancing. It's very high in estrogen.
That's a difference of different opinions. I mean, some people believe, some medical and nutritional professionals think that it helps to balance the hormones. It depends. So, I mean, there's a lot of interesting information about that. So we just have about another minute or two left, and you don't just talk about food in here, but you also talk about attachment parenting.
Yes.
We just have like a minute where you might talk about it, but I think it's important.
Oh, it's so important. A lot of people ask me, because half of my book is about getting those raw living plant foods into your family lifestyle, and the other half of the book is about following the needs of the child, the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual needs of the child through attachment parenting. And what that is after the child is born, the child doesn't know where he or she is in the world. The child needs to be connected to the most important person in that child's world, and that is the mother. And being held against the mother's skin. And certainly not to be put in a crib mm. at the end of the hall to scream it out,
mm-hmm.
but to be connected, to staying with the mother, to be held against the skin as much as possible in those first hours, days, and even weeks after birth. and following that child as the child grows and develops. And at each level, there's a different aspect of attachment parenting that caters to the child's needs.
Karen, we could talk about this all day. And unfortunately, we're out of time. I can't believe how quickly the half hour went.
Definitely.
But thanks for joining me. And where can people find out more about you? You have a website.
My website is superhealthychildren.com.
Superhealthychildren.com.
And I also have a YouTube channel, Super Healthy Children.
And may all children be super healthy. Thanks for joining me. And it's all about food. And I'm Karen Hartglass. And visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com and swingingourmets.com. And have a delicious week.
This is Tony Hendra
and Jeff Chrysler
of the Final Edition Radio Hour
on PRN,
your source for organic,
gluten-free,
sustainable
satire.